CliffCentral.com.
All right. Good morning, everybody. It is Friday. CliffCentral.com, and you have made it through yet another week. Congratulations on that. You've done very well. Well, probably the first proper working week of the year. Not without its challenges. This morning, I woke up to some information on our little neighborhood watch WhatsApp group that the Izinyoka were hard at work last night trying to steal cables. So I hope we make it through the show with some power. I've got the I got the UPS running, but God knows how long it's been going for, so we may have some trouble this morning. We'll see how it goes. Wouldn't be unusual to deal with stuff on the truck, right? That's part of the fun. That's what we like to do. So if you hear a bit of a hum in the background, that is the enormous limited power supply that's going in the background. Not a UPS, but an LPS that's making a humming noise in the background. So if that's annoying, I apologize, but that's what we got to go with today. And cable thieves, huh?
So yeah.
So they said they caught the guys. Well, they didn't catch them. They interrupted them while they were busy. These guys just dropped their tools and ran. You know how difficult your life has to be, and I'm not by no means sympathetic to cable thieves, but you know how horrible and difficult and awful your life has to be if you actually have to risk electrocution, you know, by tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of amps running through those cables? You know, to risk that, you know how awful and depraved and terrible your situation has to be? Because let me tell you, it's no fun. If you've ever seen anyone electrocuted, you cut through a cable like that, the chances of something going awfully horribly wrong are just sky high. And you're essentially doing it for a couple of thousand rands worth of copper, maybe not even a couple of thousand, maybe a couple of hundred rands worth of copper in some cases, because how much of it are you actually going to be able to get, right? And Jesus, I mean, it must be, that's really risky stuff. That's like those Zama Zama miners, you know, they go underground. Exactly. They go into these almost collapsed mines for like what is essentially, you know, a tiny little bit of gold that'll maybe buy a meal for the next 2-3 days. It's crazy.
It puts it into perspective. I remember going to like fetch the soccer ball at my house when I was 7 in the garden. You know, you do the classic, and everybody's been here if you've had football championships at your house and there's big pressure on. when you lean on the tree and it touches the electric fencing, God. I think of that.
Yes.
And then, geez, like, you know, I had to have therapy for 18 years just to get over that. And these guys are risking, like, cutting. It's a whole nother world.
It's scary, man. So I'm obviously not sympathetic to them at all. Nobody should be. And I hope many, many more people who are stealing cables do get electrocuted to death and fried like a fucking raisin. But, you know, it's really just an awful, awful predicament to end up in where, you know, life is so difficult that essentially cutting through a live wire of potentially devastating quantities of electricity flowing through your body. I mean, you'll be burnt to a crisp, if not, you know, severely electrocuted. It's just this is not a good thing. And of course it's a minor and irritating issue for those of us who have our power cut by this kind of nonsense. But it does give you an idea of how hard it is out there for some South Africans. And again, I got to say that's largely as a result of an inability of this government to convert opportunity into jobs for people. So there's something to think about this first 5 minutes of a Friday morning. This morning, Leanne will join us in a moment or two. She's just she woke up a bit late this morning and she's just trying to get her shit together. So she'll be with us now. Carl says, don't sympathize with these motherfuckers. I don't, Carl. I really don't. I'm just thinking about, you know, respect is to look at something twice. Spec is to look re is again. So I'm looking at it now from their point of view and from mine, because I'm wondering what would make someone go out and take the chance like this. And I, all I can think about is desperation. He says they deserve to be shocked to shit. I agree. When one crime affects thousands of people, these bastards deserve to be shocked. Dude, Carl, don't get me wrong. I'm okay if they get shocked to death. I'm really okay with that. But I'm just thinking about what it would be that might drive any of us, including you and me, to do something like that, you know? It's worth thinking about. And I see Sarah here. She says, morning, everybody. And she's going for a panel interview today. Six people. She's terrified. Good luck, Sarah. That's a hell of a way to start your year. And a panel,
Friday.
Panel interview. Yeah. Wow. Huh?
That's I've never ever been interviewed by more than one person.
Yeah. I mean, it's a six panel. You know, in these big corporates, though, because they are such lumbering and enormous dinosaurs. I mean, really, there are lots of arguments that go against capitalism, which I just detest because they don't make sense. But one of the best arguments against capitalism is the rise of monstrous corporations, because they are ineffective, they're slow, they're overstaffed, they're an annoying thing to watch move, because they do everything that isn't actually about a free market at all. They control way too much of the space in the market. They often have monopolistic tendencies, that kind of thing, you know. And these corporations that have these enormous HR departments, and I can only imagine that's what's going on here, Sarah. I don't know for sure. But if it is, I mean, I've heard from people who've been for like 6 to 8 interviews before they get a job at one of these corporations. Now, I could maybe understand 3. You know, you meet maybe the first person and they pass you on to some, you know, slightly more senior person. Eventually you meet the boss and the boss makes the final call. But like 6 to 8 interviews. And most of these interviews, as we discussed, I think yesterday on the show, is like an interview is just a place where two people lie to each other. they make people do psychometric tests and they probably put them on lie detectors and God knows what else in a hope to find these perfect candidates. And then these perfect candidates end up being so great at what they do and so clever and so devilish and so extraordinary that the company doesn't see them coming and they end up being so clever they can steal money, right? Wow.
Look, the more money I'm going to pay you, though, and somebody who I look up to taught me this, is that the more money I'm going to pay you, and it tells me, what is the lady's name? Sarah, hey?
Mm-hmm.
Sarah is clearly going for an important position, because this person taught me her thing is she always wants to make sure that the person almost doesn't want the job. Mm. She wants to actually make it a horrible situation,
yeah,
so that you turn away from the job to really see what you made it with.
No, sure. And I mean, they've probably got unbelievable amounts of intel behind all of these processes, but I just criticize them because they're overwielding and
they are
unwieldy. Let me use proper language here. Unwieldy and overweening. And Sarah says it's an hour interview, an hour assessment for a business analysis position. Wow.
Oh, Sarah's probably an actuary or something. Oof. You know what I mean?
Good luck.
One of these. Sarah's going to be what she hates in 4 years' time. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Big time actuary, blah, blah, blah. Start using language nobody knows.
Yeah.
And just taking over the world. Like owning water eventually. Sarah's going to be buying water so that her human beings have to buy it from her. It's going to be awesome. Go for it, Sarah.
Good.
I hope you get the job.
Tato says, blacked out curtains is the best Christmas gift I bought myself. That's a cool present. Yo. I woke up this morning and I actually just started swearing as I woke up because I saw the power was out. And I realized because I saw the messages, I was like, oh, that's what this is. But if I had blackout curtains this morning, I wouldn't even have woken up on time. So it's a good thing I don't have them. But apparently they're terrific for really, really good sleep. You know, if you really want to sleep properly and you have those blackout curtains, it's just the best thing because your body then isn't interfered with by natural light, by outside light, by lightning, none of that stuff. So That's a good thing to have. Hey, Mole. What's up?
Hello.
What's up?
Gosh, what a morning.
Yeah. When did you wake? You didn't wake up where I was just saying.
Well, I woke up a little bit late. Oh. Okay. I blame it on the fact that I don't have blackout curtains. I have these very light sort of, they're not lace, they're, because that's gross. They're just kind of see-through curtains. And right. Because of the rain and the muggy weather, I didn't wake up on time. Also, I had run out of electricity. Get prepaid, they all said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're in control.
Yeah.
I just tried to purchase electricity and the bank app is offline.
Oh, shit.
So that was fun. So we'll see how long I'm here for.
Well, me too.
Woke up to one of the cats licking the wall, which is never a good sign because it means that the ceiling is leaking because of the rain.
Oh, wow.
So I had to grab some towels and buckets to mop up all the little bits.
Well, isn't this exciting? These are the things these are things that are sent to test us first thing on a Friday morning. Kim Jong-un says, good morning, South Africa. Isn't that nice to get a message from him? The only guy in North Korea with power and with internet. It's terrific. Well done, Kim. It's nice to have you join us. I've always thought that this is the perfect show to attract people like Kim Jong-un, and there we are. Look at him.
This is knowing that Kim Jong-un doesn't even know South Africa exists.
Right, absolutely. So we were talking about these interviews that they do at these big, you know, in the HR departments of these big companies and they hire people. But just before we get to that, Annette says, what are your thoughts on the Prince Andrew debacle? So apparently a judge in America has said that he will stand trial if he comes to America. The Queen has stripped him of all his military and patronage titles. So Prince Andrew is still the Duke of York, but nothing else. And he is not doing any public duties. And I think it's about time. You know, they should have just preemptively have done this anyway. He's got a lot of shit coming his way.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, you know, there's all the jokes and things aside, this is a very big stain and a very big embarrassment on the institution of monarchy. But also, you know, the guy should have chosen better friends. Like, you know, really, Andrew Epstein. What was his name? Andrew Epstein, right?
Epstein.
No, he's Andrew. What's
George? No, I want to say George.
Jeff Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein.
Jeff.
Yeah, so Andrew and Epstein were big mates. And Ghislaine Maxwell, who's just sung like a canary, was the other mate. And it's on the basis of that he's now going to stand trial if he goes to America. Now, I wonder if they can extradite him to America. I don't think that's going to happen. In other words, he's hoping he can just keep his head down, never travel outside of the UK again, and stay safe. Never have to face the music. That's probably what's going to happen, although I'm no expert in this, so I don't know. But what a mess. And even if you don't like the royal family, a lot of people think it's a stupid, outdated institution. You know, every family has some kind of black sheep, and I think this could kill the Queen. I mean, she's a 90-something-year-old woman. She's just lost her husband. She's got a lot to think about. I think this is some kind of jubilee year for her. She's celebrating, you know.
If she pegs now, do not blame Andrew's shenanigans.
You don't
on
think
her
so?
Death.
You think she's just
no,
an old lady?
Please.
So.
She is so strong. She has been through so much. If she dies on her terms.
Yeah, she's been through so much, just doing nothing for her whole life. What about, it's unbelievable to me that people say that about the Queen of England.
Yeah.
It's unreal. What about, so my grandmother, when my uncle died, because he was a druggie, right? Yeah. And everyone was wailing, apparently. Mm. Just, like people, like, especially mothers are quite practical people from my experience.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably like, oh, no, this one, we knew. It's just that.
Yeah, he's a problem.
You know what I mean? We couldn't. But we knew. Because your mom knows. You know, we all think our parents don't know what we're like when we're 15 because they're watching us all the time.
Right.
He was probably showing symptoms from early on of you know, tomfoolery. And she's like, I always knew this one. I knew this was the bastard who'd try and bring us down. We've done so well for 800 years. Look at this palooka.
We'll have to see what happens. Just to go back to the interview thing that so many people go through when they're looking for a job at these big corporations. So Lindy Nduli says, as an HR person, I wouldn't allow one of those exhaustive processes. Not only is it intimidating to put people before panels and so on, but it also comes across as if they're disorganized. Why can't at least two or three people make a decision on a candidate? Good point, Lindy. I agree with
Lindy, that. Lindy, I wish you were the HR person at the place that sought me out in October because I started work. I did day one and day two. Only to be told, oh dear, we have to go through the proper HR procedures.
Oh my God.
I'm still,
Waiting.
So 2 weeks ago, I had an interview after applying with all the paperwork to be told that I would know in 2 weeks' time. Yesterday marked 2 weeks, sent the email to ask for an update. And no, the HR person's on holiday now.
Oh.
So, yeah.
That's how it goes.
Oh my God.
Tiger says, I work for a large international organization, but we're extremely lean for the amount of revenue we make. The bureaucracy often makes me want to shoot myself, though. And then our own George Meany, the CEO of Autotrader, he says, we do three interviews, and I meet the final candidate for 15 minutes purely to get a sense of what they're like. No number of interviews or amount of interviews will tell you how the person really will do on the job. Only the job itself will. It's a good point, George, and I think a lot of people would agree with that. That's that sounds like a better system. Yeah. Kim Jong-un.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean,
sorry, Kim Jong-un just wants to say, Leanne, we know about South Africa, right?
Yeah. I'd rather you not. Just keep to yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't bring your prickly eyes this way.
Yeah. There we go.
Please. So yes, just on the interview process, I don't know if this is what perhaps sparked the conversation. I wasn't there, but Thomas Edison, the inventor,
yes,
he would, as part of his interview process with applicants, would get them to eat soup in front of him during the process, and the whole reason is. He would go to an eating establishment. Mm-hmm. They would sit down. He would order soup for the table.
Yeah.
And if the applicant put salt and pepper onto their soup before tasting the soup, it was an immediate no from him. He was like, immediately no.
Because they didn't taste it first.
And it all has to do with the fact that they have assumptions. And so working in his scientific lab, If you come in with assumptions, it's not going to work for him.
Hmm. I've heard that story. I didn't know that it was.
So he would immediately reject them.
I didn't know it was Edison related, but I've heard it attributed to a whole bunch of people. I always add salt to stuff before I've tasted it because I just like very salty stuff.
What?
Yeah, I do.
Oh my Lord.
Like for example, I don't put salad dressing on. I only put salt and pepper on salad. I don't feel the need to put salad dressing on.
Yeah, well, salad is not going to come with salt and pepper, so there you're fine.
Okay. How about if any kind of potatoes? I usually like with a bit more salt than most people, so I put it on, and I've never been.
Yes, but those might be that might be food that you've prepared in your own home. If you're at a restaurant, if you're at a fine dining restaurant, there won't even be salt and pepper on the table for you to use because it's an insult to add salt to any meal that the chef has prepared, who has sat there and used fine balance, using unsalted butter.
Let me tell you something. I've heard about these chefs who will consider it insulting if you want more salt or pepper on your food and they don't put it out on the table. I've heard about these places. There are very few of them left. But, I mean, one part of me really enjoys that there are, angry, grumpy chefs who take themselves so super seriously that they won't allow you to decide how much salt you like in your food because I will decide for you. That's hilarious. And I love that there are such assholes in the world. But the other part of me is like, hang on, who's paying for the meal? You could put tomato sauce all over. You can drench it in balsamic vinegar if you like. If you want to add so much salt and pepper that it's covered like the fucking Alps, you go ahead and do it. That's not, you know, it's not up to the chef. You're the one who's come there for the meal. You're paying for the meal. Chef be damned. Chef.
So, hey, Gareth, you ever heard of Cotillion School?
No.
Yeah, so I went to something called Cotillion School, right? And that one was like the gospel of not to do. So in this thing called Cotillion School, you're taught like the biggest dickhead things in the world. Table etiquette, mm-hmm. a little bit of leadership, like ballroom dancing, mm-hmm. you know. So it's like a, it's super hoity-toity.
It's a finishing school, right? Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's a finishing school for men, though. For girls, there's obviously... Yeah, so that one is the one that really gets their back up. And I did it while I was at an exchange school in England. So it was proper dickheads.
What, the salt thing?
Oh, yeah. Table etiquette. Oh, that is table etiquette. That's blasphemy at the table. So if you're ever to meet the... Who's the guy that looks like you, Gareth, that could possibly be your legitimate father, who's the royal family guy?
Who?
Is it Luxembourg or Liechtenstein? Remember, there's that guy who looks
Boris Johnson.
Like...
No, I think you're talking about like the king.
Boris Johnson.
The king of Belgium looks like how I'm going to look in, you know, 15 years time, definitely.
Yeah, that guy. So
or
if you ever said
now.
Or now. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. King of Belgium.
Yeah, if you ever met him, don't put salt on his food. Or your food in front of him.
I won't put anything on his food. Why would I put something on someone else's food?
Then? Well, who knows? You're capable of anything. I mean, at this stage. You commoners are capable of anything, he might say.
Mm-hmm. You want to see why Mbulelo thinks he looks like me? Let me show you this picture.
Yes.
A lot of people, a lot of people, to use Donald Trump's language, a lot of people say I look like this guy. I don't know if this I don't know if this is an insult or if it's a compliment, but here he is. This is what King Philippe of Belgium looks like. And then a lot of people say I look like this dude. Here he is.
Ah, there it is.
It's neither an insult or a compliment. It's just a fact.
He's not the worst
looking. It doesn't put him or you in a bad light. It's just a direct comparison. Like me and Claire Johnston.
Yeah, exactly. Except that Claire Johnston did think it was insulting.
She did for some reason.
So if King Philippe was to be in a room with me and someone said, oh, Votre Majesté, you know, you look just like this guy, I think he'd probably go, who is that piece of shit? God alone knows. It's hilarious. All right, so a couple of things on the agenda this morning. I just want to show you the dumbest conversation I've ever seen in my life, and someone sent this to me on Instagram, so take a look. It's obviously, I think it's been made into a TikTok video or something, but listen to this conversation. This is the dumbest conversation I've ever heard. See if you agree.
Tell me your deepest, darkest secret.
My deepest, darkest secret is... I don't like wearing socks.
That's great.
Jesus.
She was about to break down there.
She's so fucking dumb. You know, when people say that there aren't stupid people, that everybody's more or less in this, that is a very... First of all, she's sitting there like a deer in the headlights. He asks her to tell me. Yeah, first of all, what a nerd he is. Imagine these two going out and like making children. So he goes, tell me your deepest, darkest secret. And she goes, my deepest, darkest secret. And then her brain literally switches off like my power this morning.
Inspiring.
Jesus. And it takes like a long time. Were you also counting the seconds? Did you think the video had frozen? Because then she goes,
Thought that she was going to tell a story about the fact that she was enslaved as a house slave all her life.
Yeah, or she slept with her dad or something. Yeah. You know what I mean?
She needed time to like process some awful, awful experience that she was now going to reveal to all of us. But I could hear by the way that she spoke.
What? You want to know my deepest, darkest secret?
Well, it was like she stole a lipstick or something, if you judged it from the beginning.
Well, ended up being, I don't really just, like, she like doesn't like wearing socks.
Unbelievable.
It's just, it brings me back to this point in my head that I was speaking about to family members yesterday. Someone said to me the other day when I said, you know, I'm going through this at the moment and that and this and this, and I was very matter of fact about it.
Mm.
And they said, how are you still so like positive as a person?
Right.
I mean, you're like the light of our meetings every day.
Hmm.
I had no idea this shit was going on.
Yeah.
And I said, well, because so much has happened to me in my life that it doesn't mean that much anymore. You know, it just doesn't carry that much weight. And I watching TikTok, speaking of just recently, listening to what younger people's big issues are in their lives. And I just think, wow, you're going to go through a whole lot more shit in your life that's going to make that seem okay. And then again, driving home from my parents' place last night, I happened to listen to the radio, the radio. And the question was, what made your day feel longer today? and this kid phoned in and said, we got to the shops, we got to the till, and we'd left our wallets at home. So we had to drive back to fetch our wallet.
Hmm.
I was like, if that's your biggest problem.
Must be so hard being you.
You know.
Hey, listen.
Gosh.
To everybody, their biggest problem is the biggest problem. That's the funny thing about humans is we have very little ability to contextualize our own issues over other people's issues. So some people think, you know, my life is so difficult. If you were put in almost anyone else's shoes, you'd suddenly run scurrying and begging back to your own life and your own problems, given half of the experience of humanity in the world, even in a great time like 2022, you know?
Yeah.
No, absolutely. I mean, I walked, I went to go and buy fruit yesterday and there were no plums, if you can imagine such a world at the wall that was up the road. And
Bulelo, poor you. You know, so what is your deepest, darkest secret? Please, can I play her again? I really think this could be your girlfriend. So, Bulelo, this could be the perfect girl for you. Just listen to her again. I just wanted just the part where she starts off.
Second interview. But let's get a panel to interview her to be my girlfriend. Six of them, and get George Meany to do two interviews. Yeah.
Okay, so here she is for the second time. Now she's coming to audition as Bulelo's girlfriend. All right, you ready?
Sure.
Tell me your deepest, darkest secret.
My deepest, darkest secret is...
So that is now, if you don't know TikTok, that is now going to become a sound trend.
My deepest,
so everyone will use that sound and make new videos and tell their stupid, deepest, darkest secrets. Like I left my wallet at home.
That's just, she's great. She's awesome. And the wig, people are saying the wig is terrible. That's the other thing.
It's electric.
it's not good.
She's so bad. Silicide says it is like a time travel version of Gareth, who's hiding in Belgium. That's the king of Belgium, apparently.
And what's interesting is he's still got his hair, which is another reason why it reminds people of you.
Yeah, because
and his hair's on fleek like yours, Gareth. There's just too much in common. Like his hair's fire. You know what I mean? So let's just accept it, Gareth. You've got some news coming in the next 15 years. Then
Lindy says, "Hi, boy, Gareth. He your daddy." Carabo says,
"I'm telling you,
damn, that is you, Gareth." Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you've been looking for your royal heritage in the wrong country.
Yeah, who knew I was descended from those racist slaving Belgians instead of the English and French and Scots that I thought I was. But they're all related, you know. I mean, like King Philippe is a close relative of all the other royals, and there's got to be. Yeah. I mean, I know there are certain common ancestors that we both have, so it's probably not that far-fetched. I mean, we're not closely related, but it's, you know, maybe five or six generations back, which is not that bad. It's not too far back, so not surprising. There's some strong and some weak genes in all of us. Those ones obviously came through in him and me. I don't know if they're weak or strong.
I think you need to email him and ask him to do a 23andMe test with you.
That's it.
Imagine if we find out. Wow, wouldn't that be something? I'm like in line to the Belgian throne. That would be quite a fun story. I'll tell you, that's the last time you'll see, you fuckers will see me, and I will destroy.
No, my...
And I will destroy every podcast we ever did, and just delete it from the internet. And I'll suddenly appear on the balcony in, you know, Brussels, waving. You'll go, "There's that son of a bitch. Look at him. Wonder what happened to him. He just suddenly quit the
Look
show.
Look at him putting his arm around that other old dude that looks like him.
You know how we used to joke with Sia, because he said, like, if Sia married rich or made a ton of money, we'd never hear from him again. And I know people have been asking, when are you going to get Sia on? We're organizing. Don't worry about it. But he's not ignoring us yet. He hasn't found, like, his billionaire husband. But I know I would be the same if I was suddenly... you know, found myself with my ass in the butter, married some princess or whatever. You'd never hear from me again. Bye, guys.
Oh, no, we wouldn't see you on Monday.
Not a chance. And don't expect like a WhatsApp from me in 3 weeks' time saying, "Hey, sorry, just wanted to let you know, the Swedish princess I've married has taken me off to some island and we will probably not be back." Yeah. You wouldn't hear from me.
And also, hey, I just wanted to find out how you are.
Yeah. None of that. I'm never going to ask.
In fact,
I'll probably be the one who gets an email one day, "Oh, Leanne's dead." And I'll go, "What? Leanne who?"
Yeah, I don't remember her.
you should really lean into it, though, Gareth. You should be like, you should leave voice notes, just like from random numbers. Like, "Hey, doesn't matter who this is. But a guy called Gareth Cliff once lent you $135 for lunch about 6 years ago. Here are bank details," you know, just like really lean into.
You've become a complete and utter prick about it. Like, you literally start a new life by draining every relationship in the previous life dry. That would be
like, you should email Rena.
Yeah.
I read a story about a guy who won the lottery. He won £500,000, which is a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And he has now become an anti-hero online because he decided not to share the money with his family. But turns out he is a financial advisor and a top financial corporate guy.
Yeah.
So he looked at all of this and projected what would happen with his money if he had to give it away, as opposed to if he had to invest it. And he's invested it extremely wisely. I've actually saved the article in case I win the lottery, because he's done it so well in what he's invested in, long-term, short-term, etc. Mm-hmm. And his family has now totally rejected him because they're so angry with him. But and it makes complete sense. If he had have spent money on his family's debts, they would have continued milking off of him. And his money would not have grown.
You know,
he hasn't spent anything. He's invested everything.
Yeah, you know, but in this country, for example, I mean, we were talking about this with Lebang and Bulelo just the other day. You wouldn't have a chance if your family found out, black or white in South Africa, that you'd won the lotto. You finished, man. They'll drain you dry. They'll suck every drop out of you. And that is precisely the point. But Leanne, it's funny to me that you've like saved this article in case you win the lotto, so you can do it. But you're not doing that stuff anyway without winning the lotto. You just reduce the number of zeros and you could be doing that stuff right now. You know what I mean?
Listen, yeah, that's exactly I cashed out two investments that I've had. One was since the age of 16.
Mm-hmm.
Another was in the last, say, 10 years.
Yeah.
And I've needed to cash them out in order to cover certain costs. For instance, my COJ or City of Johannesburg bill was in the 20s of thousands.
Oh, shit.
So now that I'm selling the house, I have to get that in order.
Sorted, yeah.
So one investment covered that. The other is covering 3 months' worth of bond, which I hadn't paid. So... they came at the right time. So I do invest. And now that I've cleared those out, I'm continuing to invest.
Don't get all defensive. I'm just saying. So apparently, like Tracy says that Liv Tyler found out that Steve Tyler was her father because she thought she looked a little bit like him and asked some questions. So this doesn't
happen. You're joking.
Yeah.
No, it's a true story.
So she asked her mom, and then her mom's like, "Well, yeah, there was this rock star." And then so she went knocking on Steve's door, and Steve Tyler's like,
hello, honey, what's happening?
And she said, I think you're my daddy.
Yeah. Yeah. And they've actually got a good relationship.
Well, now.
So, I don't know if you... What is it? Did he lay a bed of roses for her? Anyway, in rural South Africa...
Just on a point of order, you're mixing up Bon Jovi and Aerosmith. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. White guys who sing. Yeah. Anyway, in the rural villages of South Africa, yes. Right, yeah. Is that... So, I don't know if you know this, but there's a lot of circumstances where people are living in a certain house uh-huh. with a mom or whatever.
Yeah.
But everyone in the village knows that their dad is the guy like
next door,
six houses over. Yeah, I don't know if you know about this phenomenon.
Yes, this is a big thing.
It's an incredible thing every time I go back and visit my mom or my dad. And especially now we're at a great age where it's hilarious. Like yes. We all know, you know, now you look like your dad from six houses over and it's very awkward for everyone. It's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, they say that the proportion of people who think their father is a certain person or who pretend that they don't know their father or think that they don't know their father and they turn out to actually know who he is huge. It's like one in five is not actually descended from the people they think they're descended from. And that's why.
Well, it's funny you say that.
Well, that's,
probably the greatest presenter Africa's ever had, Gareth, has just recently found out on a podcast that he's actually, his real father is a Belgian king. Yeah. So it's funny you mentioned this.
Yeah. I mean, it happens, right? And that's why these genetic tests that they let people do are so interesting because you can find out that, you know, like that's scientific. We were just talking yesterday about how. If you ask people questions, they're very unlikely to be able to answer them when it comes to themselves, honestly, because we lie to ourselves and we're not very honest about ourselves. And we think we know ourselves, but we don't, right? Science doesn't lie. And when you have 23andMe or whatever, and you do a genetic DNA test or a whole, you know, you basically get your whole genome decoded. That stuff is not a lie. And it'll tell you stuff about your ancient ancestry and your more recent ancestry that you just can't bullshit. So even if someone thinks...
There's a TikTok trend at the moment with...
Yeah.
I think we lost Leanne.
Sorry, that froze there. There's a TikTok trend at the moment with...
I thought you had that thing that girl in the... what is your biggest fear? I thought you had a brain freeze.
Had a brain fart.
In fact, Leanne's recording a TikTok on the show.
Yeah, that's great. Leanne, what were you going to say? So, all right.
It's quite interesting how the Americans are taking offense. Remember, you can only take offense and not give offense. Mm-hmm. Learned that from a wise man from Belgium, King of Belgium.
Belgium, yeah. Belgian descendants, yeah.
Yeah. But a lot of Americans are taking offense over the fact that South Africans use the word colored.
Yeah.
Because in America, it's a racial slur.
Yes.
And the coloreds in South Africa are like getting uppity about this, yo. They're like, we are colored. Yeah. This is who we are. Don't mess with us. This is our name. So anyway, there is a, I forgot what I was going to say. Now I am having a brain fart.
You really are. You're turning into that woman from the interview.
What were we talking about?
Socks. God. What are your thoughts on socks?
The genes, the genetic tests people do. The 23andMe.
Oh, yes. And so there's a TikTok trend amongst the colored community in South Africa doing, you know, their results review from these DNA tests. Because if you look at the history, it's so interesting where the colored community comes from in South Africa.
It's from all over the place.
It's from like, Asia, North American, Indian.
Really?
A lot of like Europe. It's amazing. It's very, very interesting to watch.
That gives a whole new meaning to that term, who's your daddy, says Steve. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And this is interesting. Tracy says, oh God, I just Googled photos of a younger Prince Philip of Belgium. Gareth, you have been time traveling. The similarities are striking. Yeah, well, don't go and spoil my time travel expedition. That's what I decided to do in this life. Don't ruin it for me. Don't let the humans know. All right, listen, we've got to get to something else. We'll do some headlines later on, including how's this guy? This is a dude who's changed himself to look like an alien. He's done body modifications.
No ways.
Yeah.
He's removed his lips and nose.
Yes, he looks revolting. He's tried to look like an alien. So he has no nose left. He's got the two little holes, and he's removed his lips, and he's done all kinds of tattooing, and he's a gross human being now, but he thinks he looks great, and he wants to look like an alien. So you think you've got problems? Wait till you hear
this. How does he know what aliens look like?
He has no idea.
Exactly.
What a...
Aliens as
what
per,
a person.
Like science fiction movies, idiot. So what I want to turn our attention to before that is to speak to someone called Naveen Sher. Naveen is a jewelry designer who prides himself on a no-nonsense approach when it comes to jewelry and spending money on or investing in diamonds and jewelry. Now, what I wanted to talk about with him this morning is the amount of money people spend on engagement rings and wedding rings and all of that stuff, you know, because they say they're the four C's when you buy a diamond. There's color, clarity, carat, and cut. But I want to know about cost. So let's speak to Naveen. And then we also want to find out, what is the correct etiquette? Because we've brought this up on the show 100 times. What is the right way to deal with a broken engagement and the ring? Are you meant to give it back if a guy's proposed to you?
Also, yes. Yes, that's a great question. But I just, on the cost thing, I love what you did there. So should you give it back? I love that etiquette one. But something I've always wanted to know, because inevitably I will try and marry economically up. You know, I'm not from much. I don't intend to work hard. What's the appropriate thing to do if your wife is super rich? Should I be saving for a ridiculous one, or just give her a plain one because I can't match up to her father's standards? He started right. Nestle or whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
So always save for the ridiculous one. That's my tip.
Yeah. There used to be a formula. They used to say, like, what was it? 3 months salary or something? They used to say that was a good measure. Anyway, let's find out from Naveen. He knows more than us. Hey, Naveen, how's it, man?
Good morning, team. Hi.
Nice to see you. First of all, just tell us about your business, because you're a jewelry designer, which is a very specific part of the whole jewelry world. And you obviously design lots of these engagement rings, and you know, you help people to get there. And in many cases, they do spend a fortune. But for a lot of these girls, it's their dream come true. They get the ring of their dreams. You know, it's a big part of what's built up for some of these people the whole way through their lives. How did you get into this? And tell us about your business.
So I got into diamond manufacturing around 15 years ago through family. Mm-hmm. And I was primarily involved in the rough, from the sourcing of the raw material from the ground and the manufacturing to diamonds. And over time, like, people used to bump into me and say, oh, you're in the diamond industry. I'm looking to get engaged. I went to see a diamond in the shops and the prices were astronomical. And I thought to myself, like, hold on, like, a diamond actually doesn't cost that much if you're buying it at the right level. Hmm. Obviously, at retail, they're grossly overinflated.
Right.
And I always used to say to myself, like, shit, if I can help someone and better them in some way, let's do it. And through word of mouth, people used to contact me and say, I know you're in the industry. Could I buy a diamond from you? And I was like, sure. And then I had contacts in manufacturing, and I just put the pieces of the puzzle together, and that's how I started. And eventually I thought to myself, you know what? There's a lot of people out there wasting a lot of money on unnecessarily spending on diamonds. And having the opportunity to perhaps, let's call it, say, to help them,
but Naveen,
I went on the lines.
How is it that people can grossly overinflate the price of diamonds, for example? You're telling me that it isn't the stone itself or the industrial process of getting it out of the ground and all of that stuff, which we know about. South Africa's been a big diamond mining country. Botswana is too, for a very long time. Are you telling me that it's the middlemen who make the most of the money here?
It's actually the end user, the retailer, that makes the most amount of money.
Oh,
so if you're buying a diamond at retail level, I'm talking walking into a shopping center where there's some big brand selling stones, that price point, the diamonds are grossly overinflated. And I'm going to go one step forward. When you were talking about engagement rings and calling off or breaking up an engagement, I see clients daily. And what happens is a lady will come in to see me. She's just been divorced. She's just got divorced. She bought a diamond at X store. Here's the valuation. Here's the invoice. And now she wants to sell it. Now, she's seen this piece of paper that's got this grossly overinflated number of, let's just call it 200,000 rand.
Right.
But if you strip it down to the parts, there's a diamond and there's a piece of gold.
Uh-huh.
Gold has a scrap value and diamond has a value.
Right.
And when you take the difference, the discrepancies, I often say to clients this, and I always say this, and I say, you go back to the place you got it from.
Uh-huh.
They won't give you a third of what they charged you. And I'm confident in that.
Wow.
And I see it all the time. So it's frustrating from my side because I look like the bad guy. So people think, hold on, shit, I'm talking to this guy. He's actually the crook. And I'm like, with all due respect, I'm not that guy. And it's very frustrating. And I mean, I had a case not so long ago where diamond was put into the divorce settlement with a value.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady walked into my office, and in her mind, she was getting that value.
Mm-mm.
And I said to her, listen, before we even start this conversation, if your expectations are to get X, I'm not even opening my mouth.
So
yeah, it's completely true. I've had the experience myself from failed marriages and relationships where I've gone in with my little valuation certificate thinking I'll get 200,000 rand for a ring, walking out with 13,000 rand when it's been sold on auction.
Wow.
But just to, because the comments are coming up, I need to just put it out there. It is, if you are married under a certain anti-nuptial contract, it is a given that any gift you keep, that gift when you get engaged is a gift. You keep it, girl.
All right. So
no giving back.
So Leanne says that's the rule. Do you believe that's the rule? I mean, Naveen, is that what you tell people to do?
Okay, so I don't get involved in any of the divorce or any of their politics. I've had tears at my tables. I've heard every divorce story as if I'm the counselor.
Yeah.
So what, a 10-minute meeting is generally about an hour and a half meeting of tears. So you can pour on the tears. It's not going to make a difference. The stone has a value.
Mm.
And, you know, the only thing I care about is that you're the rightful owner and you're entitled to sell it. And 9 out of 10 times, it's always the lady. Either the engagement's been called off or they're divorced. And they are the individuals that are coming to see me with the diamond.
But have you ever met a guy who's like repossessed the engagement ring from his fiance?
Yeah, so that's how I became a little bit more, I got my ducks in a row. I once had a client who came in to sell me a stone.
Uh-huh.
She was got divorced. I paid her the money. And about 2 weeks later, I got a lawyer's letter saying she wasn't the rightful owner of the diamond.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, fuck, I've paid this lady the money. You know, now you got to go deal with your own shit. I can't take care of that. I've paid her. I thought she was the rightful owner. Was the rightful owner, should I say.
Jeez.
And obviously, she wasn't at that time. They weren't divorced. It was part of a whole divorce dispute that was going on. Subsequently, it got sorted out independently of me.
Mm-hmm.
But now you got to sign a form stating you're the rightful owner.
Right.
You're entitled to sell it. And like, that's what this business has become, because divorces are generally, and we're not discussing divorces today, what do you fight about? Money.
Yeah.
An asset.
Yeah.
And a diamond's considered a valuable asset.
Isn't it amazing how we talk about the fact that this is a stone out of the ground and so much emotion is attached to it. And I've worked with jewelers in the past as clients, and it's always amazing how you see the best times of people's lives, the engagements, the baby rings, all of this sort of thing, the 21st, the 50th, and you see the worst, the divorces, that
sure.
Someone's died in a family, I've inherited a ring. So much emotion is attached to these stones we find in the ground. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. So Naveen, to that point, to what Leanne's saying, is that, you know, in the watch industry, I mean, I hope this isn't stepping on your toes. Maybe they're your enemies. I don't really know how this world works. But in the watch industry, a nice watch comes with a certificate, you know. Why don't rings come with that, so that to avoid this is what I'm thinking immediately. It's like, why isn't there a certificate to say, Stephen, Michelle, they own this much of the ring, and here's the clauses should they get divorced? And then there's no room for tears at Naveen's office. Naveen's got a great tailored suit. He's got stuff to do. You know what I'm saying? You don't have time to be hearing Claire's nonsense.
You're 100% correct. So two things. So a diamond does come with a certificate, and that's a description. It's like, I always say a diamond certificate is like your registration papers for your car. It identifies it, it gives it details.
Right.
How it, and that could potentially give it a value. But when it comes to the internal marital politics, who gets it, who doesn't get it, that's got nothing to do with the diamond certificate. That's like kind of in your divorce agreement, like in your ANC, should we say, or an agreement between yourself and your spouse. The evaluation, or should I say the certification, will give it a value. Who gets it at the end of the day, that's not determined by the diamond certificate.
All right, so explain.
For example, if you've got a watch, using your analogy, you get gifted with a watch, great. If you've got the watch and you get divorced, do you have to give that watch back to your wife? It doesn't matter if it's got a certificate. You're the rightful owner as far as I'm concerned. Like you said, you were given a gift.
Right.
Now that we're not together, you must return every gift you've ever received in the past, in your past relationships. I don't think so.
So I'm quite interested in what the cost of a diamond should be then. Like, you know, sure. At these different levels, you talk about how retail adds the biggest margin on at the end. But what should, let's say a carat is a substantial size stone. And let's say it's a really good quality blue-white diamond. It's, you know, it's beautifully cut, let's say in a normal standard round cut. What are we looking at here? Sure. What should you be paying? Because if people are being ripped off, they need to know, what should you be paying?
Okay, so like when you originally said, one of the things was the four season, and I'm not going to go into too much detail on it now because there's a lot of research on the internet that you can read about it. But those four factors determine the overall value of a diamond. Mm-hmm. So you can buy color, you can buy the size, you can buy the clarity, which is the inclusions, the imperfections, mm-hmm. and you can buy the cut. For me, cut is always king. You want a diamond to shine, have brilliance, the cut has to be excellent. Mm-hmm. Anything less than that, I don't agree with that. Specifically coming from a manufacturing background and knowing exactly how to get the maximum brilliance.
Yes.
Now, you know your size is 1 carat.
Right.
Now, you've got three other factors to play with: the cut, the color, and the clarity. And those factors determine the pricing. So let's just call it a gorgeous, beautiful 1 carat diamond today. In South African rand terms, mm-hmm. can start from around 110,000, going all the way up to 250,000.
Wow.
And it's each color or each clarity is a different value or different, gives a different value or price to that diamond.
Obviously,
but having said that,
there are limits though to the size of, and let's just stick to engagement rings for the purposes of this morning's discussion. And you can't have too many more carats than five. It starts becoming very, very big, right? And very few people want to wear a 5+ carat diamond on their ring finger.
Yeah, so I'd say, listen, in South Africa, you know, you've got to be very careful what you wear at all on your finger.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
I can see the markets here. I mean, Garrett, I make rings from 20,000 to 3.5 million I've sold engagement rings in South Africa, and ranging from 0.2 carats, and I've sold a 5 carat to a client, and even bigger. Mm. Majority of the South African clients, I'm going to speak about that because that's where we are, they're actually really cautious. And one of the things the guys often say to me is, listen, I don't want something too big. This is South Africa. My wife's not going to wear it every day. I don't want to spend a lot of money on something, but they still want something great. Mm-hmm. And you can buy good value. And I think that's the important thing. 5 carats, yes, it's a huge size. I mean, you got to also have, if you've got skinny fingers, it's going to look even bigger. But unfortunately, and this is something I have to listen to sometimes, is, you know, I always say, what's your lady's finger size, or your ring size, should I say? And I know
your lady, your lady's ring size sounds a bit intrusive.
But I speak to friends, you should only see the replies I get about that. So it's, you know, a guy coming here and say, my wife, he's got a budget, I'm just using it, of 20,000, and he's looking for a diamond. And his wife's a finger size. This goes according to the alphabet. It's a W. Now, mm-hmm. a W is like a big fucking toe. You can't put a small diamond on it. I'm being honest with you.
Are you saying, I mean, like, let's speak honestly here. Are you saying fat people with enormously fat fingers, like pig's trotters?
Yes, I'm getting a lot of hate for this. But yeah, a big finger kind of needs a big ring sometimes.
Okay.
And that's just being blunt. Right. It's, you know, a ring's a gesture. De Beers came up with this bullshit story, the diamond lasts forever, let's get engaged. And that's how the pressure got built up by having to buy a diamond. A diamond's, it's a commercial product. It's got very little industrial use.
Yes.
Well, and then there's the whole supply and demand thing, and they're running out, and the price just went up. And diamonds, going back to how much should you spend? De Beers, 3 times your monthly salary. Mm. Bullshit. Who are they to tell you what to do?
Exactly.
That, you know what I mean?
That used to be the measure, though, right? I wasn't wrong about it.
Correct. Was the measure. Leave your ego at the door, buy what you can afford, and that's what you get. It's not going to be the deal breaker. You know, is she going to say yes or no? To go back to the earlier question, maybe yes, you're marrying a princess, and there is these expectations. And believe you me, I've seen it. Guys have come in here, and like, she comes from a wealthy family, and I can't give her this, and it's got to be at least 2 carats. And I say, okay, well, look, we're starting at like 250, 300K. And he's like, I was thinking 1 less 0 than that. I'm like, you're going nowhere at that price point. And you're definitely not going to fulfill or meet her expectations.
Right.
So guys have a lot of pressure.
So I just want to add to your business before you go, Naveen. I'm just thinking you've got the best data in the world for people with absolutely no morality like me. Is like, hey, the rich divorced women, we know where they are now. We should start like a spin-off kind of Tinder thing.
You could refer.
Catch me on my dear me, and I'll give you the database. And we can.
No, we're on.
I've got a lot of.
And you, Naveen.
Listen.
No, you're my guy.
Naveen, we're.
Some of them already have engagement rings.
Oh, fantastic.
We're going to.
Grossly disappointed of what they actually were.
We're going to appoint you our official jewelry person on the Gareth Cliff show, and we're going to have you back
and
on
relationships,
because there are a million other.
I promise you, I've heard it all.
Well, I mean, listen, there are a million questions that we still have for you, and we've run out of time for this morning, but I want to get you back at some point to talk about, you know, other kinds of things, what kind of trends there are in the jewelry design business, what people want to do with engagement rings. Some of them don't want to sell them. They want to redesign them into something else. You know, there's plenty we could talk about, but I'm afraid we're out of time for this morning. Either way, thanks for shedding some light on all of this for us, because we've got a million things that we still want to know.
And Brenda, thanks for having me. I'm always available. I love the show, and I'm here to help. So Naveen, whatever you need me to speak.
I mean, if people do want to get hold of you, though, in a business capacity, maybe there are a bunch of guys listening to us now who need to suddenly make a plan with an engagement ring. What's your website so we can find out more?
That's www.nevinshirt.co.za.
And I've been calling you Naveen, but it's Nevin.
Yeah, don't stress.
Sorry, dude.
I respond to anything that sounds Neville, okay, Devin, Kevin, you. Durbin.
No worries. So
that's okay.
Nevinsher, and that's where you can find him. Nevinsher.com.
My contact details are there. My Instagram handle's there.
Awesome.
Everything's there.
Fantastic, dude. Thanks so much for being on the show this morning.
Thanks, guys. Brilliant. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Nevin. Cheers. Isn't that cool? Like, I've always wanted.
Yeah, he's excellent.
Stuff. Yeah, cool guy.
He's perfect for his job. He's got the perfect personality for what he does.
I like your idea here, Mbulelo, of like, he's got this database of divorced women. And guys have just got divorced, and you could put them on a whole separate Tinder. And I mean, you don't even have to buy the engagement ring now. It's terrific.
It's business.
Business.
It's business.
Robin says, men buy diamonds as gifts for their wives. Then they put it in a safe. It's tax-free and an investment for them. Money laundering, basically. Well, we can ask Niven about that when he comes back on one day.
Doesn't grow in value. It's not a good investment at all.
Mm.
Do not invest in diamonds. They're not an investment. They're a novelty gift.
Dude 69 says, just don't get engaged, dudes. It'll save you so much money and bullshit.
Yep.
Okay. People very cynical this morning. It is Friday, cliffcentral.com. It's the 14th of January. We will be back in a moment or two. Stick around. We've got lots to come in the next hour, including a psychic. Yes, Leanne, we've got to start the year with a proper psychic. And we're going to speak to Star Brown, who is such a person. And we've also got... Brown Star would be rude. We've got our podcast of the week. We've got George Meany joining us. There's a lot going on the show. Cliffcentral.com. All of that and more next. Cliffcentral.com.